Chapter 6 Terra, the Imperial Palace. It was evening. The sun was setting and thin cloud hung like a veil across the skies. Above, the lights of orbital plates, stations, and upper atmospheric sky forts twinkled through the haze. Below them, a sundered world turned. Hive cities that crumbled and crashed to the ground, blanketing the lower districts in dust. The Orc attack moon might have been destroyed, but millions had died in the defense of Terra. Death hung in the air. Shadows seemed longer, and the darkness deeper. Spirits, too, had been broken. News of failure and successive tragedies had plunged the hearts of billions into abyssal dread. It was a terror all but the most ancient had never known. The Astra Militarum and the Imperial fleet, the Imperium's bastion amongst the stars, had been smashed. The military might of Mars and the Red Planet's Titan Legios had met their match. The Emperor's angels had failed to bring the beast to his knees, and even a Primarch had been lost to the green tide as it came sweeping in to swamp the core sectors and drown Holy Terra in a deluge of alien savagery and destruction. Still, the Imperial Palace stood defiant. It was like a galaxy of stars, every security lamp, glassaic window and loophole blazing with the light of occupation and industry. An army of serfs and servitors crisscrossed mighty halls, corridors, and precincts. Adepts and scribes went about their bureaucratic business. Warriors of the Adeptus Custodes stood sentinel about the fortifications, while important personages of every rank and station took meetings in conference halls, auditoria, and star chambers, talking about everything and nothing. Even the High Lords of Terra haunted the dusty corridors and grand quarters of the Imperial Palace, for the palace was to be found at the heart of the throne world, and Terra at the heart of the Imperium of Man. No place in the galaxy bustled with such status and significance. It was a Gothic crown of architectural magnificence within which the mind-numbing business of a fading Imperium was conducted. Hive cities towered about the palace walls. Titan god machines shook the ground of their assigned avenues with ceremonial patrol circuits. A glittering blizzard of landers, shuttles, and atmospheric craft passed overhead, funneling into restricted flight paths. On the Plaza de Camerata, Drakkan Vangarich moved through the crowds. There was an atmosphere, something somber and rehearsed. Still, gatherings of such number and in such majestic surroundings had the ability to send a flutter through the stomachs of even the jaded aides and clerics. It wasn't just the number, it was the identity of those in attendance that stirred the soul. The entire council was present, High Lords of Terra in luxurious robes, furs, and best bionics. Like newly formed planets in a field of debris, they seemed to accrete growing mobs of followers. Some were serfs carrying furniture, attendants and advisers. Most were sycophants and opportunists. Adepts and officials who had high lords they had waited months to meet with out in the open. The gathering on the Plaza de Camerata might have been a ceremonial engagement, but it still provided the chance to do business and press agendas. Like these bureaucratic parasites, Vangarich was also working. But while other high lords indulged and ignored, the Grand Master strode with purpose through the crowds. No flatterers mobbed him. No minions followed him in train. Talk became direct and economical. The Grand Master could get things done instead of spending his days wading through palace bureaucracy. Unlike the other members of the council, his robes were dark and simple, extravagant only in their depth. The Plaza de Camerata was by no means the largest of the palace plazas. It didn't even come close. It still took the Grand Master 30 minutes or so to reach his seat. Situated in the western upper precincts, the plaza had always been a favourite of Vangarich's. An elevated court, it boasted the monstrous fortification of the Bernician Wall on one side and views of Hive Valentine on the other, one of the more handsome hives of the capital. The venerable Warhound Titans, Canis Romula and Canis Rima, towered over its bustling expanse, brought in specially to lend the ceremony an aura of significance. The Plaza de Camerata was ordinarily reserved for theatrical celebrations rather than Astra Militarum parades or aeronautical flyovers. It was primarily used for entertainment and light-hearted distractions for dignitaries and the occasional High Lord and their staff, off-world acrobats, Xenos menageries, and colossal troops of dancers. This, despite the fact that the grand atrium at the head of the plaza fielded 12 stone thrones. Drakan Vangarich went to take a throne on one end of the line, but found Fabricator General Kubik there already, resplendent in robes of crimson fabric and silvered mail. A Skitari honor guard stood nearby, flanked by a pair of combat servitors, the grotesque fusion of their bodies disguised with ceremonial trappings. Taking the throne next to Kubik, Vangarich offered a slight bow from the depths of his hood.
Fabricator General, Grand Master.
Vangarich looked out across the plaza. It was one thing to invite the High Lords of Terra and then watch as one by one they consented to attend, unwilling to be outdone by other members of the Council. The horde of adepts, aides, and bureaucrats occupying the vast plaza in their dun robes was something else. Usually, Lord Scriveners, subsecretaries, and adjutants were not invited to such gatherings, and the repulsion could be seen on the High Lords' faces as they negotiated the crowd. Vangarich enjoyed watching them squirm. The vox-speed in Vangarich's ear chirped. Beast Cruel was calling in. By the clarity of the vox-signal, Vangarich assumed he was near. Casting a practiced eye across the multitudes, he spotted Cruel moving through the crowd in the simple robes of a scribe. With his bulk thus disguised, the assassin felt his way through the masses, attaching himself to the train of one High Lord and then the next. He moved within the protective canopies of stormtroopers, between genetically enhanced bodyguards and through dark throngs of inquisitorial henchmen. Vangarich knew Cruel to be an operative who never wasted an opportunity. He assumed that the assassin wanted to show him how close he could get and how exposed the other High Lords were. He wanted to show his master what could be achieved. Vangarich, meanwhile, had managed to lose two tails in the crowd, unobtrusive ghosts dressed as ceremonial serfs. They probably belonged to Venand, but Vangarich couldn't be sure. Another, a servitor that wasn't, had offered the Grand Master a drink, but in addition had placed a tiny listening device on his robes. That had been clumsy, and likely to have been someone else. Dropping the device into the drink, some kind of warmed, spiced wine, the Grand Master had deposited the chalice on the next meandering servitor's tray. His enemies on the Council would do anything to catch an unguarded whisper or the exchange of intelligence between the Grand Master and his assassins. Such efforts were undertaken as much in self-defence as from the desire to know Vangarich's secrets. Each High Lord present wished to know what he was planning for them. While an annoyance, Vangarich appreciated the theatrics. It fitted their location, the Plaza de Camerata having played host to celebrated savants, authorized remembrances, and great companies of actors. Vangarich had seen both Clastragar Part II, The Witches of Galatai here, as well as the massacre at Montalaban Fields, in which the company of the Chartist captains dramatized the atrocity death for death on the plaza expanse. Now the plaza was going to play host to an entirely different kind of theatrics. Vangarich saw Gibran, paternoval envoy of the navigators, exchange pleasantries with Juskina Tull, speaker for the Chartist captains, before the both of them settled. Venand and Veritas of the Inquisition leant in conspiratorially. Their eyes darted across each other's shoulders while harsh whispers were exchanged. Master Anwar of the Adeptus Astra Telepathica felt his way to his throne, while Tobris Eckharth, Master of the Administratum, scowled at approaching attendants, forcing them into a retreat. Vernor Zek, Lord High Admiral Lansung, and the Lord Commander Militant simply sat in grizzled displeasure. As the High Lords took their time and eventually their seats, the gathered thousands grew quiet. Adeptus Custodes warriors watched from the ramparts of the Venetian wall, and the Warhound Titans boomed to stillness. Beneath the feet of the multitudes, the stone rumbled. Millimetre by grating millimetre, the plaza floor began to part. Adepts and scriveners cried out and jumped to safety as a gap began to open between them. For many, it was the most exciting thing to ever happen to them, and they stared down into the trembling depths with awe. It was as if they had become part of the entertainment. Crowds moved aside, individuals reaching out in their robes to steady themselves as they rode out the quake of the parting stone. Dust cascaded down into the dark chasm opening in between, and high lords stood up from their thrones to get a better view. Bodyguards swept in to put themselves between their masters and harm's way. Vangorich looked to Kubik, who said nothing. The Grand Master nodded for the both of them. He had seen different shows and spectacles performed on the Plaza de Camerata, but he had never seen the elevated precinct open. It was quite a sight. Some of his compatriot lords were similarly impressed. Most tried to peer down into the rumbling darkness, while several even clapped. The stresses of war and Xenos' doom were momentarily forgotten in the distraction of the plaza. It was what the venue had been built for. As Vangorich caught sight of the vision below, the Grand Master of Assassins smiled. The High Lords paled, but the crowds began to cheer. Rising up through the gap created by the parting plaza, riding a colossal platform of stone, were armoured figures. Many armoured figures, stretching across the platform as far as the eye could see. As the thunder of the rising floor echoed to a stop, the reverent cheering grew louder. Before the horde of lowly scribes and augmented adepts, there had appeared rank upon rank of Adeptus Astartes. More than any palace menial had ever seen in one place, aides and advisers took the appearance of the Space Marines as an indication that some kind of parade was to take place. The High Lords knew better, however. They knew that such a gathering meant something else entirely, something impossible. As they took their seats again, with grim faces and steely eyes, the celebratory cheering began to fade. Taking their master's solemn reception as an example, the crowds stood back in a collective silence that swept the plaza. The Adeptus Astartes warriors didn't move. They were like statues or columns of standing suits of power armor. Each bolt gun and piece of plate gleamed with the fresh attentions of tech marines and artificers. Reset banners billowed in the breeze above noble captains and command squads. Indomitable sergeants stood to attention at the fore of their own squads. At the head of the column was a company decked in tactical dreadnought armor and monstrous weaponry. To the High Lords, it appeared to be an army of space marines. To Kubik, who rapidly counted their number, and Vangorich, who guessed the true nature of what he was looking at, the assembly was a full chapter of Adeptus Astartes. Not the mixed number of space marines that made up the last wall, but a single glorious chapter, standing tall and together in the presence of the High Lords of Terra. It was a truly terrifying sight, a vision that captured the imagination and took away the breath. The singular, most striking feature of the chapter, however, was not their number or presentation. It was the colour of their honoured plate. The adepts and scribes had cheered because they did not know what they were looking at, but each High Lord of Terra had received the briefs from Olinor. Intelligence of the catastrophic losses suffered there, reports of the death of Vulcan, the Emperor's son, word of Courland, and how he had met his end. The last thing the High Lords of Terra expected to see, towering above the plaza in perfect formation, were the Imperial Fists, the Sons of Dawn, resurrected and presented at fighting strength before them. The Council, like the surrounding crowds, were bathed in the glorious golden plate of the chapter, its indomitable strength and grim resolve. What they could not know, and what both Vangorich and Kubik suspected, was that each venerable suit of armour had been repainted to honour the spirit of a lost Imperial Fist, a warrior lost to the Imperium. Betrayed by the High Lord's failure, doomed by the Orcs' success. 1,000 Space Marines and their captains, selected from the battle-hardened ranks of the Excoriators, the Crimson Fists, the Black Templars, the Iron Knights, the Soul Drinkers, the Executioners, and the Fists' Exemplar. Punctuating their number was the black plate of chaplains, the bone white of apothecaries, the blue of librarians, and the red of tech marines. The plaza, however, was a vision of gold, the noble yellow of Dawn's honest plate, each suit's pauldron adorned with a black fist of the Primarch himself, clenched in cold fury, in unity, in victory. Vangorich watched the chapter master of the Imperial Fists step forward from the gallery of armoured statues, his Terminator armour a monstrous sight to behold. Ornate and golden, it looked as impregnable as the phalanx itself. The ground shook at the chapter master's mighty step. As he approached the line of thrones, several high lords vacated their seats and took cover behind them. He stopped before the only throne to have remained empty, that which would have belonged to Lord Commander Courland. The Space Marine gave the remaining members of the Council the pugnacious glower of his helm and allowed spidery arcs of power to cascade from the pair of gleaming black power fists that he held at his sides. The Cyclone missile launcher, mounted over his hood and pauldrons, clunked ominously to priming, its sensor array blinking with readiness. At odds with the bombast of the suit, the crackling fists and missile launcher, a simple adamantium short sword sat maglocked to the chapter master's belt. A ceremonial weapon, Vangarich assumed, noting the numeral 7 crafted into the blade, a symbol denoting Rogel Dorn's glorious 7th Legion and the Defenders of Terra. A pair of chapter serfs, garbed in yellow half-robes and carapace, came forth. The Terminator Space Marine's helm hissed and vented streams of equalizing pressure as the serfs unlocked the seals on the honored item and took it away. Revealed was the grim visage of Maximus Thane, formerly Chapter Master of the Fists Exemplar, now presented to the High Lords of Terra as the Master of the Imperial Fists. Within moments, High Admiral Lansong was on his feet, the folds of his braided uniform and cloak ruffled. As he snatched his extravagant tricorn hat from the dusty rolls of his wig, the High Admiral's existing sneer deepened. Beside him, Abel Veriolt, the Lord Commander Militant, was also on his feet, jangling with medals and bionics. Snarling through his scars, the High Lord glared at Thane with an ornate replacement optic.
"This is an outrage," Lansong said. "Has the Chapter Master no shame? Is this how he honours the memory of brothers fallen?" "How dare he," Veriolt chimed in. "How dare he feel the Adeptus Astartes here? Before the palace war at chapter strength, in flagrant disregard of protocol and historical precedent." "It is simply not done," Lansong said. "Such demonstrations have no place here." "This had better not be some crude attempt to intimidate the council," Veriolt said. "If Lord Commander Courland were," Lansong said. "Which he is not," the Lord Militant added.
Vangarich watched the interchange with interest. Lansung and Veriolt's words withered before the sight of the Chapter Master. Towering over them like a living fortification in his battle plate, Maximus Thane seemed to be beyond them, beyond the concerns of palace politics and expectation, and most of all, beyond his remit. The Grand Master understood why the pair of High Lords were on their feet. While Vangarich had tarried in filling the Ecclesiarch's seat, that belonging to the fallen Courland, and the office of Lord Commander that went with it, was now open. Like Veriolt and the High Admiral, Vangarich lived in the shadow of such opportunity. It drew them in like a collapsing star. Status, power, doom. Both Lansung and Veriolt saw themselves as candidates to be honoured with such a title, especially at a time of war and catastrophe. As Venand and the Grand Provost Marshal went to join them, Thane stamped down on the plaza with his boot. The thrones shook, and the High Lords with them. The quake sent Venand and Werner Zech back into their seats. The High Admiral and Lord Veriolt followed, falling back and thudding into their thrones. Chapter Master Thane turned around, presenting his armoured back to the High Lords. The powered movement drew a gasp from several members of the Council who couldn't believe what they were seeing. Vangarich tensed. If one of the High Lords did something stupid, like call for the Adeptus Custodes and decry Thane and his Space Marines as traitors, then things could escalate quickly. The Grand Master wouldn't allow such a thing. Thane must be given time to speak. Vangarich watched as the Chapter Master addressed the plaza. His voice boomed about the Space Marines, High Lords and Underlings alike, relayed from his suit to Voxcasters situated about the precinct. "Brothers," Thane said, "lords and citizens of mighty Terra, listen to me now, as you would to the Master of Mankind and his ministers of fate. For through our veins runs the blood of Rogel Dorn, as through his the blood of the Emperor flowed. Before we were favoured with the Emperor's blessing, before we were shielded with angels' wings, we were as you are now, of common flesh, of uncertainty and questions eternal, I tell you this to remind us all that we are all interconnected, that we rely upon one another, that we achieve nothing alone. The Grandmaster watched Thane begin to pace up and down the plaza, his armored boots sending quakes through the thrones of the High Lords of Terra. "Earlier," Thane said, his words carrying far and wide across the plaza, "I spoke at length to select High Lords. We talked of matters of Imperium and State, of the vanquished Orc attack moon, and our challenges on the Beast's monstrous homeworld, where heroes fight to bring an end to this vast and terrible conflict." Bangorich watched High Lords scowl and whisper amongst themselves, ignorant of such a meeting. As the chapter master went on, he drowned the council members' protests in thunderous proclamations of his own. "It was a long meeting," Thane told his audience, "as meetings concerning matters of consequence tend to be. While listening to the High Lord's council, I noticed a spider crafting a web across the casing of an arch. Every time a scribe or servitor passed beneath, the web was damaged and torn. As I listened to the wisdom of our High Lords, I watched this tiny creature repair the structure it had created. Time and again, forces beyond its control or even understanding tore the web to shreds. Time and again, the spider crafted its home anew. Our lives are like the threads in that spider's web, each one connected to hundreds more, relying upon each other for strength and stability. Our Imperium is like the spider's web, myriad worlds connected by an intricate network of shipping lanes, interstellar trade routes, and navy patrols. But when something crashes through that web, like the Xenos invaders, this beast we have come to know as our deadly foe, strands snap, structures collapse, and the web hangs in disarray. The spider, however, knows nothing of fatigue. He has no indulgence for the loss of hope. The futility of his efforts is an alien concept, as it is with us. The Imperium of Man has stood for more than 1,000 years because of such resolution and industry. Billions live within our web of protection. Worlds might be lost to the mutant. Subsectors fall silent at the arrival of alien invaders. Roots fall prey to warp storms and pirates. The Imperium endures. It will always endure while there are loyal subjects of the Emperor to sustain its majesty. From ages of darkness and strife, we have returned. We lived the dread days of heresy and loss. We shall survive this green plague. Our victory over the alien shall be marked in statues on the palace arcades, in monuments of commemoration crafted from the ruin of 1,000 worlds, and in memories passed from Terran father to Terran son. We shall never forget the rising of this beast, the destruction he has wrought, and the unbreakable will it took to defeat him. But first, we must defeat him. We must strike at the heart of his empire as he has done to us. We must return to Ulanor, a planet infested with the alien, at the heart of a system swarming with a foe. The surrounding sectors are decimation and barbarity, awash with attack moons and monstrous fleets of greenskin craft. We have stood in the blood and dust of Ulanor and failed. But during the Emperor's Great Crusade, we raised the battle standards and banners of victory over Ulanor. The difference then was that we were united under the Emperor's gaze. We were humanity resplendent, fighting together for a common cause. The vessels of the Imperial Armada, the god machines of the Mechanicum, the Space Marine Legions, and the millions of the Imperial Army, we were as one with the indomitable will of the Imperium behind us. We have proved that nothing can stand before such a collective will, and nothing ever shall. That is why we return to Ulanor, glorious in our unity, assured of our victory, and ready to reassert our dominance in the galaxy once more. Let me hear you now. Let my Imperial fists, who go to war in your name, hear your brotherly love. Let the Master of Mankind in his palace hear your pride in his dominion. Let the Beast across the void hear your fury and defiance. Drakkan Bangorich felt the plaza tremble with the wild roars of desiccated adepts and soulless scribes. Dust fell from servile robes as blood thumped once again through withered hearts. An army of petty bureaucrats found themselves and what it meant to be human, with Thane's words echoing about them. His rallying call had awoken them, as if from some smothering nightmare of crumpled vellum, data streams, and meetings eternal. They were men and women once more, not just augmented collators, servants, senseless to impending doom. The orc seared into reality for the palace clerks, administrators, and scriveners. They were not merely digits on a data slate, or the subjects of dictated scrolls. They became creatures of alien flesh and blood, a living, breathing menace, a reality in which they found their deepest fears, a monstrous vision upon which to project their hatred. In those moments of bellowing affirmation, the Grand Master watched the palace servants forget the petty jealousies of their masters, the politics and game-playing. It all became so simple. The Imperial Fists, with the Astra Militarum, the Imperial Navy, and the Adeptus Mechanicus at their side, would destroy the Green Plague at its source. They would emerge victorious upon Olenor and deliver holy terror from alien destruction, because they had to. Because every war ever fought by the forces of humanity had allowed for a moment like this. A moment in which those that were left pledged their all to a future unknown. A moment in which survivors found their voice in the silence of empires all but conquered and declared with one voice that they were forever. Vangarich looked to Thane. The chaptermaster stood tall amongst the triumphant cacophony. Adepts shook their staffs of office, while scribes flapped scrolls in the air. Beyond, the Grand Master saw that the ramparts of the Venetian wall were crowded with silhouettes, similarly waving. Whole sections of the palace had ground to a halt as serfs and servants of the Administratum stopped to listen to the Master of the Imperial Fists, a chapter whose glorious plate, like the rising of a new dawn, had once again appeared on their hallowed plazas and precincts. Members of the Adeptus Custodes looked on as the bells of the Ascension Tower and the Campanilius Cursus rang out, all but drowned in the earth-shaking horns of the Warhound Titans. For a moment, the setting sun broke through the rust-stained clouds of the capital, bathing the Imperial Fists in a golden light. With the announcements of Canis Romula and Rima booming across the plaza, Vangarich left his throne and Kubik followed him. The High Lords were out of their seats and in uproar, but their carping remonstrations and threats made little impression upon the crowd, most of whom could not hear their masters. None spoke to the Grand Master of Assassins, none tugged at his robes or unleashed their bluster upon him, none asked him to join them in their outrage. While Kubik was courted, the Fabricator General gave them the impassive blankness of the machine. As Thane turned around to address them directly once more, Vangarich and the Fabricator General reached the bottom of the atrium steps. Both turned crisply in their red and black robes to regard the council, flanking the looming magnificence of the chaptermaster. The High Lords grew still, the violent indignation screwing up their faces, remaining fixed. Venand and the Provost Marshal looked grave. Standing with Thane, Vangarich saw that the High Lords were looking at him. Usually they averted their gaze, but now they stared at the Grand Master of Assassins with horror and dread. While the legions of the Adeptus Astartes and the might of the Mechanicus caused hearts to hammer in chests, it was the declaration of Vangarich's intentions that chilled the blood pumping through them. Several members of the Council went to speak, but Venand silenced them with a gesture. Nothing would stop High Admiral Lansung and Abel Veriult. With a swish of their heavy cloaks and the creak of boots, the pair left the atrium by a side arch to be joined by stormtroopers and a naval honour guard. From there, Lansung and the Lord Militant made their way off the Plaza de Camerata and back into the labyrinthine safety of the palace. Vangarich looked to Thane. Like Kubik, the chapter master didn't take his eyes off the remaining High Lords. He nodded. Vangarich obeyed. Turning, the Grand Master of the Officio Assassinorum strode after Veriult and the High Admiral, his black robes swishing after him like an ill wind. As he left the plaza and the dumbfounded council, Vangarich activated the vox-speed in his hood.
"Cruel? I have them," the assassin told him. "They are going by way of the Tortestrian Gate."
"We shall engage them in the Vangara Quarter," Vangarich told Beast Cruel. "Meet me there."
It did not take the Grand Master long to reach Krul and the High Lords. He found them walking through a cluster of little-used halls in the upper east wing of the Bastille Autronomica. The boots of the High Lords echoed with urgency through the vaulted chambers while the pair blustered their indignation and self-importance. Like one of the many spectres rumoured to haunt the Bastille Autronomica, Vangorich appeared in a grand archway. Theriault's stormtroopers saw him first and ran forwards to encompass the Lord Militant in a canopy formation. Theriault and the High Admiral slowed to a stop in the middle of the hall. The naval armsmen took position around Lansung, levelling their las carbines at Vangorich. The High Lords looked the way they had come, back along the footprints they had left in the dust. There, they found Beast Krul, leaning against the pillars of the grand entranceway from which the prince led.
"You dare to bar our way?"
Beriel shouted across the hall at Vangorich.
"I dare to walk the corridors and halls of the Emperor's mighty palace," Vangorich said, "and speak to whom I find there."
"We have nothing to say to you," Lansung told him, "or your Adeptus Astartes compatriots."
"You can both make all the high-minded speeches you like,"
Abel Veriold warned him.
"But the great armies of the Imperium, their Lord Marshals and regimental commanders, answer to me and me alone."
"And even if they didn't," Lansung said, "you couldn't possibly muster their strength. Not without the might of the Imperial fleet. Thane may conjure the ghosts of the Imperial fists, but he seeks death among the ruins of Ulanor alone. For without the Astra Militarum and the vessels to transport them, he condemns his Imperial fists to an early doom."
"I wholeheartedly agree," Vangorich told them, approaching. "That is why the Chapter Master has engaged me, to impress upon you the importance of your role in the great victory to come. You are going to save the Imperium, my lords, for your God Emperor, and for us all."
Veriold kept turning. As he swept his cloak around, he looked between Krul and the Grand Master of Assassins.
"Call off your dog," the Lord Militant said, "or I will order my men to put him down." "I shouldn't worry about my man," Vangorich said as he walked towards the High Lords. "I would worry about your own."
Panic spread across the faces of Lansung and Veriolt. Armsmen and stormtroopers became twitchy, moving their high-powered weaponry off Beast Krul and tracking it across both of their own ranks and the ones opposite.
"Vangorich!"
the Lord Militant roared, drawing a master-crafted pistol from beneath his cloak. It was all baroque barrels and antique finery. As it hummed at the Grand Master, Lansung pulled an extravagant dress blade from his scabbard. It was all over in moments, the flash of lasguns lighting up the hall. It was unclear who fired first. Either a stormtrooper or an armsman opened fire upon members of the opposite party. Beams proceeded to crisscross the open space, searing into troopers and the High Admiral's honour guard. Peerless marksmanship on both sides and the close range ensured that the firefight was brief. Bodies dropped to the dusty floor all about the two High Lords, the craters in their chest carapace glowing. Unfazed by the fury of the blinding exchange, Beast Krul had unslipped a pistol of his own and blazed away. Aiming through the gunfire in confusion, the assassin blasted Veriolt's pistol into a shower of scorched components. His second shot took a stormtrooper through both helm and head. As the guardsman fell away, Krul sent his final blast at Lansung's ridiculous blade. With a blinding flash, the ornate sword was knocked from the High Admiral's hand and sent skidding across the hall floor. As the whoosh of lasfire died away, Lansung and Veriolt looked down at their dead men, and then at each other. Both were of advancing years, but they were still at their hearts military men. Seeing abandoned las carbines on the floor, the pair went for the weapons.
"Rise!"
Vangorich commanded. The High Lords staggered back as a stormtrooper and a navy armsman got back to their feet. Scooping up their weapons and kicking away others, the two bore no evidence of damage or injury. Whereas the other bodies on the floor displayed searing blasts to the chest and helm, the two standing before them remained untouched.
"What in the damnable eye is going on?"
Lansung rumbled.
"Vangorich," Abel Veriolt spat, "what is the meaning of this?" "It is a demonstration, my lords," the Grand Master of Assassins told them. "Sleeper Cadre Black Glass, Identify.
The armsman's patrician features began to ripple and twist. To Lansung and the Lord Militant's revulsion, his face began to change. Muscles spasmed and rearranged under face flesh, while the stature of the honour guard became slight and shapely. With the las carbine still held upon Lansung, the armsman became an armswoman before the High Admiral's eyes. From beneath the severity of a regulation haircut, dark eyes burned with lethal intelligence.
Augustra Fex, my lord, the assassin said. Temple Calidus.
By the time the stormtrooper had removed his helm, the features beneath had also transformed into those of a young woman. She leant into her las carbine and pointed the weapon at Abel Verriolt.
Kittred Vaunce, Grandmaster,
she said, without taking her eyes off the Lord Militant.
Temple Calidus.
You dare to place your monstrous infiltrators in my ranks?
The Lord Militant growled.
Damn you, sir,
Lansung said. As the pair of you dare to monitor the comings and goings of my temples from orbit, Vangrich said, and try to stalk my clade snipers with inferior marksmen of your own.
We will not be intimidated,
Beriol told the Grand Master.
You cannot threaten us, Vangrich. We are beyond your reach, especially with the segmentum in peril.
I don't need to threaten you,
Vangrich told them, his words like shattered glass.
I only need to kill you. Cadre, enact your protocols.
Augustra Fex and Kittred Vaunce slipped easily into a grotesque transformation. Bones crunched, sinew tore, fat and muscle ballooned. They grew in height and heft. Their chins and faces grew fat. Vaunce became the mirror image of the battle-scarred Lord Militant, while Fex's skin grew lined and weather-beaten like the High Admiral's. Even their eyes changed colour, making the pair indistinguishable from the High Lord's.
Lord Militant,
Vaunce addressed Verriolt in his own gravelly voice.
High Admiral,
Fex said, touching her temple in a playful salute, as the shock of hearing his own voice played out across Lansung's face.
I could execute you right here, Vangrich told the pair, in the Imperial Palace, and no one would be any the wiser. I could replace you with my assassins and have the Astra Militarum and the Imperial Navy under my control.
Who could conceive of such a monstrous thing?
Lansung said.
Who indeed? Vangrich said. With one command, I could rid the Imperium of two sacks of rancid wine and use your influence to bring the Council on board with Chapter Master Thane's plan.
With your stationed fleets, High Admiral, and your mustered billions, Lord Militant, the Imperial fists just might stand a chance against the foe and snatch terror from the jaws of the beast.
Well, what are you going to do?
Verriolt asked, his voice betraying the tremor of a man who had thought through his enemy's battle plan and found it to be sound. Lansung stared at the Grand Master, his great chest rising and falling.
That is really down to you, my lords, Vangrich said. It is your fingers on my triggers. I take solace in the fact that your deaths won't be my responsibility, though you should know that they would weigh very little on my conscience.
What do you want?
Lansung asked.
I want your cooperation, gentlemen, Vangrich said with a wolfish smile, which died on his face as he carried on speaking. I want you to live up to the Emperor's expectations. I can replace your aged flesh, but the experience that has put lines upon that flesh would still be lost to the Imperium, should I have to take drastic measures. Your knowledge and military skill are the only things of worth to me. They are the reason you are alive. What do I want? I want sentinel regiments allocated to the subsector, as well as core fleets to remain on station about the capital system. They will coordinate with the Adeptus Astartes of the Last Wall to shield Terra and the Emperor from the enemy, should our attack on the beast fail. It will not fail, however, for you will mobilize every available warship and transport, every battle company and battalion to accompany the Imperial Fists to Ulanor. If you hold back so much as a stretcher-bearer or fleet tender, I will issue the order for your assassination. Augustra and Kittred here will be waiting upon it. They will be every guardsman, every armsman and officer that you see about you, in place and waiting. Waste no time in flushing them out, for they are not the only members of the Black Glass cadre. My operatives are everyone and everywhere. Each is ready to take your worthless lives and replace you at a moment's notice. So tell me, my lords, do we have an accord?
Lansing and Veriold looked wretchedly at one another and then at the Calidus assassins, who were like reflections in a crystal-clear mirror.
We do,
the High Lords answered, their voices laden with dying anger and doom.
Good,
Vangarich said, nodding to himself at a job well done. He enjoyed the moment, the High Admiral and the Lord Militant finally doing as their duty required of them.
Very good.